accession number 29909, reel 2.
Jim asked, reel 2, how is nitroglycerin stabilised? How was the nitroglycerin stabilised?
Well, I think it was gun cotton mixed with it. You know, there's something that stabilised it. But for all that, handling it, you need rubber gloves because it does. And I've talked to different fellows, you know, even on this holiday, and they did name it what is now, you know, it's sort of jelly, you know, like jelly nut. You get the green and the jelly nut. We've handled that, but as I say, we're in Gaza, we had big dumps there, and when we opened them up, being warm, the nitroglycerin just shone across the floor. And one of them, well, that was stupid to think about going in there, walking about on that, you know. So we got a bit of sack and then some diesel and set light to it and threw it in and took a walk. Because the only thing you're worried about is somebody's left a detonator laying about there because it'll burn. You need one detonator. Because in that school in Gaza, I'll tell you another thing. When we was in there, Robbo never knew when to stop. We went to airborne schools, we went to blooming commando schools, telling them what not to do and what to do. We even had a hell of a drum of cable, and we went out at night about 2 o'clock in the ruddy morning to a new unit that came in, rolled this cable out, had about 6 leads on it, and mixed it amongst the camp with gun cotton primers on the end, you know, electric. Rolled it back out of sight with the battery, because all the ends are on the side of the drum, and you touch one here, you touch one there. Well, the whole camp was in an uproaring 10-minute sort of thing, when, you know, they thought they were being bombed and shelled, you know. Well, we'd done 2 or 3 episodes of that among different, you know, like I said, there was commander school, airborne school, and there was 2 foreign setups which started a bloody war amongst ourselves. I wasn't involved with that because only 3 of you went on to that. And they went down by the side of the bank of the river, and I'm not sure who they were, but there was 2 regiments there, and they'd done that to them. What happened? They start firing over each other's camp, you know, creating running war. Till I think one of our soldiers had to go down there, and I don't think they thought a lot of him, you know. And that was a crazy sort of thing we was involved with, you know. And we'd done that. Whose idea that was, I don't know. But we'd done several bits of that. And, God, but explosives. Well, the biggest problem I've ever been muddled with is Rimini and Ancona. We were attached to the Polish Army Division and right up with them amongst their poor women, because them women were feeding them the tanks right up, you know, because they were firing off where, you know, we was with them. And we used to go like that to the women, praise them up, but they didn't have no time for it and never smiled. And we all thought, well, poor beggars, they lost their country, you know, what have they got, you know, and they were pressurised up at the coast of Italy, I knew that, they were well used, because when we got to Rimini, there's a huge viaduct, and a bunch of us were sent down to it, and we looked, because a holler, you know, it's a tunnel right through, you know, the huge viaducts, we looked, and it was solid of explosives. You're not worried about the quantity. What you're worried was mixed with it, because we know all the part, you know, the set-offs, well, you lift, or you pull, you know, and you'd be out. Why? Half of us were taken off that, which I went to, you know, I was all for that, crawling down the tunnel there, getting that stuff out, and went over to Ancona. And in Ancona, we had to remain the whole industrial side of Ancona, which made no sense. Three-story building, ring-main, do you know what I mean, the ring-main? Electric cable and trigger off gun cotton. Because gun cotton was sheer, 18 inches of main masonry, clean out, you know, or steel, its own thickness. And ring-main the building, dropped them, and we had South Africans with these big D-12s roughing over what we dropped, and that was the whole industrial side of Ancona. I'm talking about really three-story buildings, you know. We can't ask why when, you know, you do it. You're not to ask why you're doing it, you know. This is a funny setup, you know. I know we dropped the whole ruddy lot, and we took some private houses because the people had disappeared, you know. And I was in there one morning about 4:30 in the morning, and everywhere shook. And I looked out the window, everywhere we dropped was tanks. And I thought, Christ, if Jerry saw that, what a field day. But they'd been pushed well ahead, you know. But they said they were back to have... they didn't say. Well, it's all surmising, because you don't know. But we heard somebody say that they were altering their sites for gyroscopic sites instead of stabilised sites or something like that. But that's hearsay, because we don't know what that... Not only that, going up Italy, we were split up, you know, twos and threes sometimes, sometimes nine. I don't think there were 30 altogether in that the MO4 side. But when we went up, halfway up Italy, we get the message back when some of them come back, you know, because you're split up, you know nothing. You're not told where they're going. That's the last thing. You don't know, because, that, you know, they're took out. And what happened? We heard about a factory in southern France being ring-mained while it was turning out arms for the Germans, and the Germans were there. The factory was ring-mained and dropped. I said it to myself, I'm glad I wasn't involved, because there was French people working in there, you know, poor beggars, whether they were voluntary or whether they were forced, you don't know. But that's the sort of capers that went on.
You mean the building was brought down while people were still inside?
Pardon?
The building was brought down while people were still inside?
Yeah, working on. Yeah, alive. Yeah, that's what I meant. I said it was just ring main. See, you could sneak around with the cable, you know. Well, this is SAA's business, you know. They go in, you can do them sort of jobs. Well, we was involved in that, well, not like Sisyphus business. When I first went in, it was the same bloody business, you know, living amongst them. Just imagine. You see what we was given when we first went in. I mean, because I hadn't been in the army 6 months. And this gear, 30 days rations on you, your own body, carrying 30 days rations. We were like Pat Ruddy Mules, you know. Well, it was a mess, really, but there you are. That was Gubbin's idea, because, as I said, I think that was him what came on that there mine layer and... got us to, well, asked us to volunteer to do a job to get the hell out of it, because we saw our boats getting knocked out, you know. I said, the Hardy, the Effingham, the Curlew and the Hunter. I remember them, especially the Hardy, because the two Londoners said, well, when they were firing and shooting, we heard that, of course, they were radio controlled, rum up for whoever take the swastika off the hill. And it was one of the destroyers done it, you know, you could hear what was going on. And when me and Gillian Brown, see, we were freelancing all over that ruddy hill, we weren't sort of tied up, we were sifting about. And, oh Christ. Last night. Oh. Oh, I know. Gillies, or one of them, said, I wonder if there's any rum on that Hardy, because she was practically beached, you know. So we went down, and they went, they got into it, and they couldn't find none. But I picked up a huge bundle of letters like that tied. I flicked it open, and it was a Maltese girl, smashing looking girl, and that was, but he, well, he must have married her because of the pile of letters. But I felt sick because on the beach, with nine fellas buried off there, Hardy, and his name was on there, you know, I tried to carry that bundle with the idea of getting them back, but see, we couldn't carry no more than what we was already carrying. So I gave the bundle to the MO section, what were on the point of moving, because, you know, the 49th Dib withdrew and left us only 10 behind. On our own, up that hill, to destroy everything they left behind, the field guns, the cars, and there was damn the cars, you know, transporters, new, and three tonners. You know what we done with them? Sent them over the cliff down in the field. Yeah. And then, the fellas, see, we split up. Some went down to the field guns, which the RA, the Tilly had left, opened up the breaches, and I think they put gun cotton in them, you know, because that will split them. And they'd done that. I went across with another couple, like, actually, into this big barn with all the food, and I mean food, like bloody Tesco's, you know, had an all food. And the Norwegians ran round us, thinking we was going to destroy it. And we said, no, you go in and help yourselves as long as the Germans don't get it. And they went out, oh, mighty hundreds of them, stripped the place. And as they went out, they got Krona notes and they were stuffing them in our ruddy coats, you know. We said, don't want your money. 1,000 Krona notes they were, you know. And some of the lads said, Christ, we're ruddy rich. I found out they wouldn't, but they went, and, oh God, and this, well, when we finished that job of getting rid of everything, the food, that, the oil and the guns and that, we were on our own, and this destroyer, because we see the convoy go with the whole of the division, that was very nice, and they left the destroyer behind for us. And when we'd finished what we were doing, made our way down to the destroyer. This is a funny part. As we went on to the destroyer, one was missing, and that was Gil. But they knew where he was. We said, oh, we know where he is. He wandered into Sweden. And they picked him up. I said, well, he wouldn't have deserted, you know. But you see, that tunnel was from there, on sort of with Sweden. Well, the silly clock, I don't know what he'd done, but he got himself into ruddy Sweden and he didn't come home with us, you know, but they knew, you know.
But, if we go.
But the biggest laugh when we got back to Gurk or somewhere like that, some of the lads went floating off to the bank with all his money. All closed. I couldn't understand really why that, because why they foreclosed it, the kroner was still on the go, but there were 1,000 kroner notes and I had all the money, you know, they were stuffing it in the postcodes, you know. Oh dear. But
if we go back a bit, could you explain?
Yes, where you want.
Could you explain how you came to join the army?
I volunteered. I thought, being in a trade, and they were calling up, I went down to Springfield Road, it was, they had a house. I called in there and said, well, I'd like to go in the trade and all that, they had a load of cons really. But I thought, you know, oh well, I got in, they give me papers and whatnot, type. And Christ, I was in. And my folks didn't know, nobody knew me, and what? Got on a train, sent to Katchik. I got to Katchik, I said, this is all right. I said, but my folks at home don't know nothing, you know. So he said, okay, he gave me 48 hours leave to go home and tell them I joined them. That was a hell of a... You know, I thought, you know, I put myself down, willing to join, you know, but not like that, you know. Walking and straight on the, you know, sign this King Shinny or whatever the hell it was, I don't know. But I volunteered stupidly all the, well, they said don't volunteer, but touch wood, I got away with it. My best mate was the Earl of Essex. I tried to bring him up. He's been gone 3 years now. I tried to ring up Rodwell over this M.O. Ford log because he lived at Ipswich, and I got to his brother. He'd gone, and his brother was saying, oh, he was fanatic on blowing up. I said, don't tell me. I said, I was with him. And I said, what was you doing? He said, I was in the Navy. I was involved with the Hiroshima bomb. Yeah, his brother. Yeah.
How old were you when you joined?
19.
And how did your parents react?
Oh, good to say. They were upset because they were, you know. But what could they do about it? Actually, I sort of buggered up the marriage sort of thing, because I'd only just got married, you know. And doing that, well, I didn't know I was going to be shot off like that, you know. Well, everything was inches of cock-up, you know. I just casually walked in there and said, right, if I get called up, I'll do this. But I want to question, if I get called up, yeah, sign on, bang, bang, you're it. Yeah, Christ.
What happened during your training?
Oh, it's all over the place. Bailey Bridges at night. Them two Londoners, what I keep on about. All through the series, they were beggars. It was a bit of a laugh in Harstad. We were in houses, good old wooden houses, you know. And our sergeant, he was a bit naughty at times. He got a house. They come out the bedroom onto a balcony. Of course, he took that and got us out there bawling and shouting what he wanted and that and that. And the trouble was, if I ever kept pulling out to see a field watch he'd been issued with, you know, every time he was talking about it, he'd pull it out. This couple of Londoners said, ah, we'll have that, you know. And they did. So, Lad Sergeant March, oh Christ, out. A lot of us prayed in front of this bloody balcony. He comes out, he was livid. Where's my big watch and all that, you know? And he was livid. So I looked up at the Gillian Brown, I thought, you know, something about that, you know, they heat the bugger up, I think. And the point was, he said, right, you there, you there. And he sent me and Jimmy up onto the hill into a wooden hut. You look out. What the hell are we going to look out for, sort of thing, you know? But we went up the hill, that's hell and stuff, you know. And this here wooden hut. And we looked out, well, you could see miles, you know. And we stuck up there, looking out. Night time, I thought, bugger this, we got down and had a bit of sleep. In the morning, I woke up and we could smell bread being baked. Well, of course, the air clean and that, you know, down the village, that come up there, it was lovely, and we had the money. Oh, we're going to have some of that. So we're off down to the village, says Brace, to buy this bread. And when we got down there, there was a bunch of Norwegians that were on, and I was having a session. And what's wrong? Oh, Tedeschi was here last night, sort of thing. German, you know. What's wrong? It was a ski patrol, and they went by our blooming hut. Oh, Christ, yes. And I thought, Christ, I'm glad they did, because they, I should say they had automatics, I don't know, but the stupid stuff we had. And so another one thing, what's your first name?
Toby. Toby.
Tony. Oh. When we first went out there, we were issued with Lewis guns. And we were riled about that, because when these Stukas came down, stupid rifles, was useless. I mean, they came down rooftop level, you know. You could see the pilot. In fact, he looked as though he was ruddy grinning, you know. And we often wished the hell we had the ruddy Lewis gun. Then they took them off us. Do you know where they sent them? To Finland. Now, this is what I'm saying about what goes on regards equipment. It's all right taking gear off one to another when that one could do with that ruddy stuff, you know. I mean, we wouldn't have got plastered like we did if we'd have had that ruddy Lewis gun. At least we'd have had a bit of protection, which the ruddy right was no good on the plane, but when you get a plane just skimming over the rooftops, machine gunning like they were, you know, because they could see you, because we were in brown rig out on white, you know, we were proper targets. And we dived under, you know, and whatnot. And like we was having a raid there, we dived under a ruddy whale factory when two come over and they played Merry Hell. And we was under this wheel factory, and this young girl come running down the road, and we shouted out, I've got a phrase book, got water broken, you know. And she looked up and saw us, she come running in, and got under with us out the way. And she said, forget the Norwegians, she said, I was educated in Edinburgh University. Yeah? And she got up, and but I always remember that when that finished, they blew up one or two of the houses around us, and this girl went off home, right? We went round the corner, and there was a military policeman laying full length out in the road. And what the ruddies, I say it was them, Christians done it, there was a big wooden frame, window frame, I think it was. And that was laid round him. He was in a picture. I always remember that. He was a strapping red fellow, you know, military police. And he was stretched out in the road, and this here wooden frame was round him, you know. And we saw that, and we knew what had happened. That was obvious. The Christians give us a really rough time, you know, because the propaganda they were pumping out, you know, was getting all sorts. There was one time Germans had invaded Dover and were going up the M2. And we were saying, what the hell are we doing here, you know? And that sort of thing. The propaganda, you say, it does hurt, you know. Because, Christ's sake, I know when I was out in the Middle East area, when these bloody leaflets come down and it said, you're here, there. I was Yanks climbing in with the baits. Well, I'd already experienced that with my own ruddy wife, but a lot of the fellas, you know, they just went haywire. They knew I and Jimmy were so sorry for me. But Christ, when it come to the end, when Greece, there was a nipper at home. So his marriage had gone up in the air as well, poor Becky. He worried about mine, but he was, and he thought, well, you know, this is what happened. I mean, fellas just went on the loose because, I'll tell you another episode. When me and Earl of Essex, we went down into Cairo from Gaza. Because we were free marching, you know. We didn't have no regimental stuff. And we were down in Alex, and we stand with the dock, and this here boat pulled in. And I think there were 60, 70 girls got off it. But as soon as they got off it, this ruddy boat turned round and went. And we caught on what it was all about. And of course they all panic and start screaming and going on. And me and the Earl of Essex, we went into the car outside and found, what do you call it? Oh, guys, what do you call it? The embassy. Somebody to tell them what had happened, because there were a load of girls from Portugal been ditched there. Well, you know why. Free land for the Arabs, that was what it was all about, because we knew what was going on, even when Russia side. And we got the, well, we went up to this what the hell was it, embassy, and told them what happened, and they dealt with it. I think they got them back, you know, and I made sure they didn't get involved in, you know. But that goes on. There was over 250,000 Russian girls, you know, caught up in that. You see, bloody fellas giving them all the bloody dope and what good times they could have and all the rest of it. In fact, it's so funny, where this holiday, this girl came to the counter, she said, I said, I want a roll to go home. I said, you're not English. She said, no, I'm, I said, I'm going to tell you, you're Russian. How do you know? I said, well, there's a lot of pretty girls in Russia, and I've seen, you know, I picked her out of the screens, that, you know, it's so funny, you know. I don't know why, but there are some very pretty ones, because in the, oh dear, Haifa there, I did another thing, from Basra, I was shipped to Damascus and to Haifa. Well, these boys were running around, the loud boys running around with some damn great Jaffa oranges in the sandbag. I don't know what the hell I gave him for it, something. It was a bit of a laugh, really. But I had to see the bag off them. And we had a white coach taking us through to Damascus from Basel, and we're going across the desert, and I was up in front with the driver, what was driving his car. I said, "How the hell do you know where you're going? There's no road. You point up in the sky, you know." And we'd been going about a couple of hours, and he stopped. And he pointed to our rifles. And what's the matter? There was a couple of big brown bears that were playing with each other, and he wanted us to shoot them. Oh, no way. They're not interfering. They're playing. You know, we don't do things like that. He got a bit riled because we didn't shoot them, you know. So, yeah. Well, we got mixed, you know, and a mixed bag, you know, when you think of it.